It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this seventh day of September 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. Whether you're listening to the podcast or listening to the live program, well, thank you for being a part of this unique little broadcast experiment. And if you are listening to the podcast, please like it and subscribe to it wherever it is that you are downloading it from. Apple Podcasts, Podbean itself, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn. But if you are listening live right now, pop over to the chat room, and you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Irish Dave, Anatole, Squeaky, Theo, hey guys, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So consequently, we extend our undying thanks to our seventh day of the month subscribers. That means thank you to James. Thank you, James. And thanks so much for being a partial sponsor of the program. James is our lone subscriber on the seventh day of the month. Thank you. If you'd like to become a subscriber, it's not difficult. What it boils down to is going to HeadOn.live, putting $10, say, for instance, you can do 20 or 40, whatever you like, putting that in the field there for the PayPal interface, and then clicking the box that says make this happen once a month, and it will. And you will then be part of the merry little band that helps keep this whole thing going. So the fundraising goal for this Thursday, takes us to $600. That's basically yesterday and today. And Ralph's, oh my God, Donnie's going to debate Meghan Markle challenge is still on the table. So if somebody kicks in $25, we'll knock that down to $550 to go, which would be really helpful. Okay? Yeah. Thank you. Okay, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, let's start with the obvious, because I like this one. So, wait a minute, what's this? Irish Dave with a note. The 14th Amendment Insurrection Clause bars individuals from being sworn into certain offices, but it does not bar them from seeking the office. When the 14th Amendment was passed, there was no mechanism to prevent any voter from voting for any candidate. What would John Roberts do? WWJRD? It would seem, though, by extension, and this seems to have held up in New Mexico with a coy cowboy
Trump,
that participating in the insurrection was enough to keep you off the ballot, and oddly enough, that was not overturned. So that's worth pondering. But yeah, the I guess we would call it the breaking news of the day. Peter Navarro, whom we last heard from bloviating outside a courthouse while a protester stood behind him with a sign that she held that said, Trump lost, and you know it, and he eventually tried to swat it away. Yeah, and precious. Well, in a trial held in the courtroom of U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta, a jury tried and true convicted Peter Navarro in short order and said that he was, in fact, guilty of criminal contempt of Congress because he refused to show up with a congressional subpoena on him and testify before the J6 committee. So he... goes forward from there. He will be sentenced on January the 12th, 2024. And he will remain at large until that time on his bond. I wonder if Judge Amit Mehta, upon convicting him and finalizing the conviction on January the 12th. I hope Amit Mehta will not follow that same procedure that the maggot judge did with regard to the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, you know, Stevie Three Shirts, and let him just walk around on the promise that,
I'm going to appeal this and, you know, and I'm going to find another maggot, some maggot appeals judges who'll overturn it.
So, goodbye, Pete. Jailbird. Afterward, Navarro lost his shit, predictably, and went back outside the courthouse to speechify. Navarro said, curious because he had a subpoena which called upon him to speak to the J6 committee. But nonetheless, he said,
here we are with one of the most important constitutional separation of powers issues, and people will not let me speak.
Yeah, what he means by that is he was not allowed to present a defense of executive privilege because Nitwit Nero didn't have an executive privilege to assert. He wasn't president anymore. Yeah, he went on and said,
A sad day for America. Not because they were guilty verdicts, because I can't come out and have an honest, decent conversation with the people of America.
I love it when people claim that they're being silenced, you know, while they're running their mouths.
I want you to understand that this is the problem we have right here. This kind of divide in our country between the woke Marxist left and everybody else, and this is nuts.
Because one of the people who has been needling him said that she'd been assaulted with a flagpole, and some chaos ensued.
This is the first time in the history of our republic that a senior White House advisor, an alter ego of the president, has ever been charged with the alleged crime. It's the first time that this has ever happened. Now, at the same time, what's so remarkable about this case is that even as the Department of Justice was bringing this case, they had a policy for more than 50 years that says people like me, senior White House advisors, alter egos of the president, cannot be compelled to testify before Congress. Absolute. Yet they brought the case. This case is a landmark case because it's about the constitutional separation of powers that goes back to the days of George Washington.
There's probably not a true statement anywhere in there. And then Peter Navarro couldn't speak because a protester kept blowing her whistle. Ralph's notes, LOL. Off to Club Fed with you, Peter Navarro.
This is the same suit I was wearing the day that I took the job. I haven't even been able to afford a new suit.
There's going to wind up being a greatest hits of Peter Navarro whining at some point in time. I love it when crooks complain when they get caught being crooks. I am not a crook. Crooked as a dog's hind leg. All I had to do was show up. That's all I had to do. If he had shown up and taken the fifth, he would not be there. If he had shown up and said,
"My name is Peter Navarro. That's all I got to say. On advice of counsel, I refuse to answer any further questions."
Done. But instead, he wanted to maintain his vow of omerta to his orange god emperor, Tangerine Tiberius. And kind of a follow-up for this Thorn in the Side Thursday.
Yeah, I know. Emilio says, "Yeah, why are you silencing me all the time, Robin? Neo-silential shill."
That's a new one. Let's see about this. Hold on. This is why it's fun to have a producer. I know, because I don't. Let's catch that terribly enjoyable audio from Peter Navarro. Oh, that looks, interesting. Cynthia introducing me to Leja Miller's YouTube videos. I'll check that out after the program. Does a good job explaining why the filthy Christian nationalists are so obsessed with trans people. She's sounding the alarm on the religious bastards big time. Yes, Kat, I did. Thank you. It did come through, and thank you very kindly. Oh, and following up from yesterday, Dave in the Blood, unfortunate correction needing to be made. It is with a heavy heart that I come to the Horn Family Community Congregation with a mea culpa. I made a mistake about Trinity Broadcasting. They're not out of South Bend, Indiana. The organization I was thinking of was Lucy Broadcasting, Lester Summerall's old grift. We here in the Blind, and by extension, Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium, regret the error. Remember, order now before Thanksgiving. Get 20% off your favorite crucifixion package. Dave always works a plug in there. Thank you, Dave. Peter Navarro, etc. Steve in New York says, I've been thinking about this. I'm very content to let these people bloviate, speechify, and talk. I don't want anyone to enforce any gag order on them because they clearly have not learned the vaunted rule of holes. When you're in one, stop digging. I'm content to let them continue to dig that hole and throw the dirt back on themselves. I think it's valuable for sentencing, political ads, posterity. Yes. I think, well, file under give them enough rope. And let's see, there is the Peter Navarro video. Poor cranky old white dude. Trump lost. Bro, you're already facing charges. Lying Pete needs money. Jail coup plotters. Oh no, the dreaded anarchy symbol. Prison boys. Fafo Tario. You know, dipshit.
This is what's wrong with America here. www.defendpeter.com. Defend.
She's having way too much fun. Hey, see, all he had to do was like have the press conference somewhere else, not in public, and well, it would have been a lot more difficult for her to make his life miserable. Funny how that happens. So, from Peter Navarro onward, among other things, well, from yesterday, you might recall we had the clip of Pastor, Brother, Governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, Mike Huckstervey, father of Jethreen Bodine, the governor of Arkansas. Now, oh, over here, Jethreen. No, over there, Jethreen. Oh, never mind, Jethreen. But in that clip, he pointed, you know, if Trump isn't on the ballot in 2024, you know, because he's presupposing that he's A, going to live that long, and B, that he will be the Republican nominee. I mean, granted, that's how it looks right now, but there's rather a bit of time between now and next summer and the Republican National Conclave. Right. And he said that this will be the last election decided by ballots and not bullets, because these maggots are so far down the rabbit hole, they're, you know, they've got a lot of guns and a lot of ammo, and they're ready to start shooting. I guess there's something out there called the Driveway Liberty Podcast. Don't go looking for it. Your brains will leak out your ears. It's stupid. Run by some maggot moron. And, of course, because he can't resist an invitation, Matt, it just gets worse, showed up thereon to complain about the prosecution of the most crooked man ever to occupy the Oval Office or squat therein.
Yeah, it turns out they'll let anybody have these jobs who gets the most votes.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how that works, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and now they're trying to change that, like what we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. with secretaries of state trying to decide certain, you know, Trump can't even be on the ballot.
Look, and that's something I hate to keep hammering this.
I predicted
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I hate to keep hammering this, but yeah, it's funny. I don't know if anybody's told Matt it just gets worse this. But it's the job of secretaries of state in the several states to make sure that the election laws are faithfully and fully followed and executed. Complicated, I know. And that includes how people get on the ballot and whether they can be on the ballot.
I listened to that episode when you guys said
that it wasn't even going
to be a test. To me, it's not like a big... you could see it coming from
a He's arrested. We can now say he's got a felony on his record or a high-level misdemeanor. He can't be on the ballot in our state. That has been the plan from the beginning. That has been the plan from the beginning.
Actually, no, dipshit. You can be imprisoned with a felony on your record and still be on the ballot. Lyndon LaRouche. Eugene V. Debs. That is not the point at all. But then again, Fields' three commandments, commandment number three, don't smarten up a chump. And here we are. They don't want to smarten up the chumps. It has nothing to do with being charged with a felony. It has to do with leading and supporting an insurrection. By the way, there's an interesting thing about the 14th Amendment in Clause 3. It speaks to giving aid and comfort to our enemies. Just because I sit around doing things like reading the third clause of the 14th Amendment, and it came to mind, bit of a tangent here, sorry, but it came to mind that aid and comfort to our enemies and what qualifies as insurrection are terms that are subject to definition. And what immediately occurred to me was, what about Tommy the Tuber? Now, I mention this because, and we'll get back to Matt at Just Gates Worse in a minute. I mention this because the secretaries of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and, of course, Space Force, they jointly penned an op-ed in the Washington Post and did something that secretaries of the various branches seldom do. They criticized a sitting senator. This led to the United States Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro telling CNN Tuesday evening, "I would never imagine that one of our own senators would actually be aiding and abetting communist and other autocratic regimes around the world. This is having a real negative impact and will continue to have a real negative impact on our combat readiness, and that's what the American people really need to understand." Well, when Secretary Del Toro said that, USAEC, Army Europe Commander General Ben Hodges, then said that Tommy the Tuber was engaging in dereliction of duty as a senator, I guess. All of this, Tommy the Tuber, hamstringing the American military, in particular its leadership, its command structure, because they're because he's throwing a fit that the military, in the wake of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health and the assault by our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties on the court, on the reproductive rights of people capable of pregnancy all over this country. That was his initial excuse for hamstringing the military command. And then last month he started barking and grunting that the Congress hadn't followed the Constitution since Donald Trump left the Oval Office. And now he's barking about the Biden administration's all woke. That's why I'm doing it. All that vaunted collegiality in the Senate of the United States has pretty much gone up in smoke where Tommy the Tuber is concerned. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, who gave up a significant portion of her body in service to this country, said to Senator Tuber several times, "My hole didn't hurt in military readiness." Three service secretaries, you're wrong. What more does Senator Tuberville need to hear? Chris Murphy of Connecticut, another United States senator, said, "Here's what the Tuberville fiasco tells us. There's nothing the GOP cares more about than controlling women's health care. Republicans are clearly willing to do anything, even compromise our military readiness, in order to ban abortion." And his numbers are even, I mean, they're not in the shitter yet, but they're trending downward even in Talibama. Because Talibama do love them some military, and some of these shenanigans have already cost Talibama, White House doesn't say this and says, no, that's not the case, but their political shenanigans with regard to women's reproductive care and the existence of transgender women have led out of Talibama to, and Huntsville in particular, not get the Space Force headquarters like Nitwit Nero done promised him it would. He's becoming a bit of an anathema in the nation, although he's trying to maintain genuine butchness. Let's see here. I want to get the text of the 14th up. Because I think if we're going to start using it, and we should, it may apply to Senator Tuber, too. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given, or, not and, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. It's that or clause that may oppose, that may apply to Tommy the Tuber. Because in weakening the command structure of the United States military, he is giving some serious aid and comfort to folks like Big Bad Vladdy Daddy over in Muscovy. And, you know, it's worth noting that he's one of the people that Nitwit Nero sought out by phone during the insurrection that he ginned up on January the 6th, 2021. It's worth thinking about. Like I said, Tommy the Tuber is being real butch about, "Oh, care!" When queried about his assault on military readiness and the military command structure, "I don't care. I was a football coach at Auburn University. I don't care. That was a hell of a lot more important than being any old senator. The feller's got to have something to do after he quits being the football coach at Auburn University." Lee in New York says, "Senator Tommy's poll numbers. Would you say they're going down the tuber?" You did. There's our first cowbell of the evening, somewhat muted. But maybe that's a conversation worth having. Deliberately weakening the military command structure of the United States military in a time of significant global tension. Well, how is that not within the ambit of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment? And it isn't just about appearing on the ballot. It would seem that if there is some sort of judicial determination that he is guilty of what the 14th Amendment and Section 3 talk about, then his tenure as the, oh my God, senior senator of Alabama is voidable. Bye, Tommy. I'll freely confess that this could lead to some chaos, but so too does having a crippled military command structure. And look, I'm not a military fangirl, but I'm not anti them either. We have a military to serve specific purposes. And the fact that sometimes presidents of the United States and frenzied Congresses use them for improper purposes, well, that's not the military's fault. At all. I'm pro-peace. I protested the war in Iraq, the war against the people of Afghanistan, And as it turned out, you know, we were right. They were wrong. But that's not the same thing as despising the military. Tommy the Tuber despises the military, which used to be something that didn't play real well among the folks of Talibama. Going back to Peter Navarro for a moment, Steve sends something along, Steve in New York. Irish blessing. A friend of mine just posted this. This has Peter Navarro written all over it. It's a much more elegant formulation of the rule of holes. May you have the hindsight to know where you've been, the foresight to know where you're gone, and the insight to know when you've gone too far. Or the insight to know when you fucked around and found out. Fafo Navarro. I like that. Now, back to Matt, it just gets worse. Shall we? Because we still got some clip to do here. So they don't understand why he's being... Why Trump might be removed from the ballot. But like a cockroach that's impervious to raid, it doesn't even slow them down. Stupidity seldom does.
That has been the plan from the beginning. That has been the plan from the beginning.
I really worry that that type of action could lead to violence. And I am so wildly opposed to violence. I don't think it's how we should resolve our disputes.
No.
But when you start telling people that they can't express their participation in this American experience through a vote, then they start looking for other ways. And yep. They're not. The vote is the best way to do it. The other ways are not so good. And I worry if they start to take the vote away, you could see bloodshed in this country none of us want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, like none of us want. Like Matt, it just gets worse, didn't want on January 6th, except for the fact that he was up to his eyebrows in it. And so there's the second reference to bloodshed if the maggots don't get their way, because that's what it boils down to. You know, are they going to shoot other Republicans if Nitwit Nero is not the nominee, fair and square? This is how we know it's a cult. This is how we know that it's rigged, that it's fake, that it's a fraud, it's ginned up, it's rubed up, it's dummied up. No one's taking away their vote. I mean, was my vote taken away when I didn't get to vote for Howard Dean for president of the United States because he wasn't the Democratic nominee? You know whose vote was taken away? Yours and mine. When the guy who won the popular vote, Al Gore, didn't get to be president. You know whose vote was taken away? Yours and mine when the woman who won the popular vote in 2016, Hillary Clinton, didn't get to be president of the United States by operation of an anachronistic, racist holdover from the vicious and bloody days of the beginnings of the Republic. I'm talking about the Electoral College. No one's telling the maggots they can't express their participation in this American experience through a vote. No one's telling them that, even remotely. But if the law says he can't appear on the ballot, if the law says that he can't be elected, that's the Constitution. That's not the woke liberal Marxists, to use Peter Navarro's words. Now, here we are. And just as a follow-up, wait, what's that? The Gates scale, that in San Francisco. It's good to know that causing people's deaths ranks as not so good. I wonder what you have to do to be considered horrible. You really have to wonder, Matt? I mean, there's all good. There's not so good, and that's shooting people you disagree with politically. But horrible? Wow. Horrible is a woman being able to make her own decisions about her reproductive life. That's horrible. Horrible is a president who did absolutely nothing wrong, but his son went through a rough patch and used some drugs and got a near total stranger pregnant, and that's horrible. That's horrible, man. But following up on, yeah, I guess we're just starting this Thursday with some following up. There's a follow-up to the conviction and sentencing of Enrique Tarrio to 22 years in up the Federal River. Enrique Tarrio's mama, who pretty obviously didn't do a very good job.
Don't say nothing about mama.
Zuni Duarte Tarrio held a whole damn press conference in Miami in which she barked and grunted and bleated and brayed about how unfair it was that her son participated and helped mastermind a domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States and then got charged and indicted and prosecuted and convicted for doing it. Zuni Duarte Tarrio said the case against her son cost her family hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills. She's standing next to a pettifogger named Naive Hassan, who was a lawyer for Enrique Tarrio. She went on to say, 22 years of sentencing seems like extremely excessive. It's really hurting the families, all of the families. Well, Zuni, can I call you Zuni? He got the 22 years that he did because he was tried before a maggot judge who went light on him. Yeah. Didn't hammer him. The DOJ wanted 33 years. The seditious conspiracy statute allowed for that in conjunction with the domestic terrorism enhancement. But the maggot judge didn't really think so much about, you know, domestic terrorism.
Wasn't like those Black Lives Matter protesters.
Timothy Kelly. Whine on, Zuni, whine on. And his pettifogger said he will appeal the conviction. I don't think, well, I don't know. Maybe Timothy Kelly will let him remain out on appeal. But one, we do need to bear in mind, not just the January 6th aspect of it. Yeah, Zuni Duarte Tarrio, grieving mother, it seems to just breeze past the fact that not only did her son helped mastermind a domestic terror attack on the Constitution and the Capitol of the United States. But he was also part of a band of street punk, violent, fascist, brown shirt thugs who went around beating the hell out of anyone that they wanted to. Hey, he wasn't charged with any of that. And of course, in the days leading up to January the 6th, he also attacked a church and tore down a Black Lives Matter banner, flag, and burned it in the street. That's the poor boy who's been subjected to a, and she used the word, witch hunt. Zuni, cry all the tears. And make sure you go and visit your boy in the joint. God, I despise him. Oh, and over at my filthy morning habit, the morning zoo crew was having a pretty good time talking about Nitwit Nero's claim that, yes, he will take the stand and testify in his criminal trials. Now, we've talked about this in the past. Oh, by the way, Matt in San Francisco, Mama Tario. This woman raised her brown son who led a white supremacist group and will spend the next 22 years in jail because he tried to overthrow the government to benefit 45. As far as I'm concerned, she needs to sit and spin. I think we have consensus here, Matt. You raised a little terrorist, Mama. Kind of makes me wonder about you. They don't learn. They don't care. Back to the 14th Amendment for a moment. Darlene in Connecticut says, I've felt the 14th applies to traitor Gangrene and Hawley et al. For their support of and roles in the insurrection. And isn't going to the D.C. prison to advocate for the insurrectionist scum in there, complain about the supposedly bad conditions, and sing freaking patriotic songs of supporting with them also giving aid and comfort? Seriously. We'd need supermajorities in both houses to expel those traitors, and make no mistake about it, the other side would exact revenge forever. So doing something and not doing something still succeeds in nullifying the Constitution one way or another, which is exactly what the radical white wing really wants. Yeah, they want, but what they want, Darlene, is minority rule. Because, make no mistake about it, the maggots are a minority. You ever seen that map? It shows all the counties that Trump carried versus all the counties that Biden carried. And all the areas that Trump carried are in red, and then there are these little blue dots. I saw where someone did an experiment with that map. And they took the red spaces and changed them from red to white as a reflection of all the places where people actually live. You know, large population centers. And when you start actually looking at populations and not, you know, geography, it's not even close. It's all gerrymandering, it's all voter suppression, it's all blue smoke and mirrors. The maggots are a minority, and that minority wants to control the rest of us, The normal people, the decent people, understanding that normal is only a setting on a dryer. Randy Radar with the seditious conspiracy charge says, I thought the tops was 20 years. It was, but there is a terrorism enhancement. And you can depart upward. And the maggot judge even agreed that the terrorism enhancement was appropriate. And then proceeded not to do much enhancing. Trying to downplay the terrorism of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Because taking the terrorism seriously would mean taking the terrorism of the man who gave him his power and his authority. Well, would catch him in the same corrupt net. As to Matt Gaetz, Emilio says, I don't support violence, but Gaetzing worse and worse. How about some violence, everybody? That's how it played out. So they've moved into the let's shoot people phase of the program. From Mike Huckabee to Matt, it just Gaetz worse, and I have a feeling we're going to hear more and more and more of this. But like I said, over at my Filthy Morning Habit this morning, they were having some real fun with the notion of Nitwit Nero testifying in his own defense at trial. Because, like I said, as we have discussed here in the past, no competent counsel is going to let his client testify if his client is a pathological liar. Because you cannot represent Donald Trump without having been lied to yourself. Promising to pay and then stiffing counsel is a lie of a form. And so knowingly participating in presenting false testimony to the court can and often does result in a lawyer losing their ability to practice law. So it puts counsel in a rather ugly little box. And so with that statement by Nitwit Nero, the Morning Zoo crew could barely constrain themselves. Was that thunder or gunfire? No, that's thunder. Okay. I guess it's going to be one of those evenings.
So if you have to go to trial, will you testify in your own defense?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You'll take the stand.
That I look forward to.
Now, I think that obstruction charge is going to get to trial, Mr. President.
I think that I'll testify.
Okay, if you do, and they ask you on the stand, did you order anyone to move boxes? How will you answer?
I'm not answering that question for you, but I'm totally covered under the law.
Okay.
If you read the Presidential Records Act, just read it. You take a look at it. I'm totally covered.
He's never read two words of it.
It's a civil act. It's civil. Now, Biden had no civil act. The things he did are criminal. But he doesn't have a deranged person on his
side. Seriously, give me a break. Donald Trump lying.
How could you sit there and listen to that?
I mean, he's lying on so many levels. First of all, he will never testify. He'll say, in 2 weeks, I am going to testify. In 2 weeks,
I'm totally covered.
I am going to put out my full Georgia report. In 2 weeks, I'm going to build a rocket ship at Mar-a-Lago and fly to the moon.
In 2 weeks.
All lies. First of all, Joyce, Let's just say it right here. Let's just say it right here. By the way, I keep hearing like people banging trash cans.
It's me. It's always Heilman.
He's kicking stuff.
The Astros are here.
Are the Astros and 30 Rock, does that mean I'm supposed to throw a fastball or am I supposed to throw an off-speed pitch to George?
I kicked the thing.
Heilman's got a twitchy leg, Joe, for many reasons.
He's literally got restless leg syndrome.
That's correct.
Okay.
Tighten it up.
Okay. It sounded like every Astros game a couple of years ago. Yeah. By the way, did they take those trash cans on the road? I'm just curious how they did that as much as they did. Anyway, Joyce.
Back to Joyce.
We all know, first of all, Donald Trump lying. It's not covered by anything. Like, obstructing justice is not covered by anything. But secondly, explain why no lawyer will ever let Donald Trump testify under oath, and why Donald Trump will never let his lawyer have him testify under oath.
Donald Trump is not capable of taking the witness stand and telling the truth. He's not capable of following any instructions he's given about what he can and can't testify to.
Ding,
and this
ding.
Clip, Joe, it's a great example.
I mean, this is a fun little moment for me. This little teeny tiny radio show. Almost 20 years old. Running on the last frayed thread of a dry-rotted sneaker string. And the millionaires here are finally getting around to talking about stuff we dealt with a while back. It's charming.
Example of that, because Trump would, for instance, very likely be prohibited from talking about what he claims is the Civil Presidential Records Act that protects mm-hmm. him at trial. Prosecutors would file a motion to exclude that because it's not true and it's not relevant. But Trump would likely be bombastic on the witness stand, saying things that would get him into deeper trouble. It would essentially be malpractice for a lawyer to let him testify under oath.
Okay, hey, Joyce, can you tell me about Georgia yesterday and exactly what happened with Chesbrough and Sidney Powell being denied their request?
Yeah, this is a preview of how confusing a trial with 19 defendants can get, Joe. But the most important takeaways from yesterday are this young judge, who some people had been skeptical of, is very firmly in command of his courtroom. He made a quick decision from the bench, argued, as he had to, that the two defendants who asked for speedy trials will get them. Those two will go to trial in October, but Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbrough will be tried together. They will not get the separate trials that they asked for. The fate of the remaining 17 defendants isn't entirely clear, but it sounded like the judge was considering very seriously trying them together in one group. And that's in large part because of this forceful argument that prosecutors make that no matter how many separate trials are held in the Georgia matter, in each one, prosecutors have to prove not just the limited number of overt acts that an individual defendant was involved in, but the entire RICO conspiracy that they've charged. Prosecutors say that'll take some 4 months. It'll involve 150 witnesses. And so they took it straight to the judge, and they just said that the issue, Your Honor, is how many times do you want to have to retry this same case? Sounds to me like the judge will do it in two or at most three tranches.
So, Joyce, let's talk about what the judge said about the actual process of the trial. Judge McAfee expressing some skepticism, as you and others have, that all of these defendants could be tried together and in a speedy way. Judge McAfee said, quote, "It just seems a bit unrealistic to think we can handle all 19 in 40-something days. That's my initial reaction." End quote. The prosecutors told the court that a trial for all 19 defendants would include 150 witnesses and last about 4 months. He's going to come to a decision, he says, sometime next week. How do you see this playing out from here, Joyce?
So there are a lot of moving parts here, but his assessment is a very pragmatic one. He was simply saying that in the period of time between today or yesterday and late October, when the first two defendants are scheduled to go to trial, he couldn't put all of the defendants into that courtroom so quickly and even decide all of the pretrial motions that they would file. There would likely be a flurry of motions to sever, other motions to limit evidence. And just as a practical matter, that can't happen. In fact, it's a little bit surprising that Fani Willis continues to insist that all 19 be tried this quickly, because if there were convictions, they would be very vulnerable on appeal to claims that the defendants didn't get the due process that they were entitled to, that they were forced to rush to trial very quickly. So that, I think, is the important part of what goes on here. The judge is making good decisions early on designed to protect the ultimate results of any trial here.
So, Susan Page, let's talk about the politics of Georgia, which is going to be perhaps the closest state on the map next November. You know, if Joyce's analysis is correct and this trial doesn't come to be, at least the Trump portion of it, you know, we will be deprived, voters will be deprived of seeing him sitting in a courtroom day after day during this trial. But yet, it's still going to shadow the race there. And it's also an interesting state because the Republican establishment, including the governor, have stood up against him. How do you see that playing out there in the Peach State?
Who would have thought Georgia might be the key state? I mean, if we're down to maybe four really crucial swing states, Georgia is going to be one of them next year. And it's been interesting because if the Republican Party, the traditional Republican Party, has been on the run most places in this country, Georgia has been different because of the governor and the other officials who stood up to the pressure from Donald Trump to change the results of the election. I agree with you, though. I would love to see court hearings on television. I think they're so interesting. They're so informative. They're so educational. It's like C-SPAN for the judicial system. I'm all for it. And I would just, you know, Joyce, who knows more about the law than I do, of course, says Trump will not testify. Let me vote in favor of Trump testifying, because that is something I would really love to see.
There is that.
Would be a blast. Well, former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance, thank you so much. If you want to hear more about this, Joyce and her sisters-in-law, best podcast in law in the business. They talk actually about the Georgia case. So make sure to download Sisters-in-Law. Thank you.
Okay, nice plug, Joe. But I'm in agreement with all of it, because it just makes sense. And yeah, it's legal malpractice to put Donald Trump on the stand. He cannot be compelled to testify under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. And if he chooses not to testify, the prosecution can't even mention the fact that he didn't testify. And sooner or later, there's going to be one of those come-to-Jesus conversations with the client.
Sir, they always call me sir.
Sir, you can't testify. You're looking at God only knows how many years in prison as it is. You really want to add a few counts of perjury to that, sir? Mr. President? I did like the part about going to build a rocket.
I'm
going
to build a rocket ship at Mar-a-Lago and sail off to fly off to the moon.
That was cute. And then this... Oh, my gracious sakes. Oh, and seeing as how there is thunder outside, just a quick mention that if the program should suddenly disappear, it will be because Appalachian Power ran under the bed like a terrified chihuahua. Really is rude to the chihuahuas to compare them to Appalachian Power, but, well, here we are. But I wanted to mention this because... our friend John in Central PA... Oh, where'd he go? Damn it.
Well, there was. I had a clip of there was a clip. I saw it just a moment ago. Ah, there it is. Thank you. Yes, thank you, thank you. This is delightful. Somebody asked the other day, where the hell's Dick Cheney? And in fact, in chatting with Boss Man Wayne, I said, listen, Dick Cheney had 7 heart attacks before they mugged some decent person in an alley and tore his heart out of his chest and put it in Dick's. Oh, that was a well-timed clap of thunder. And so he's got his cowboy hat on, Dick Cheney does, and he's got something to say, y'all. He's got something to say, because he's Dick Cheney, and he used to be Vice President of the United States. And, of course, he loves his little deferment, you know, his daughter, and she's the leader of the Never Trump movement, Liz. But what does it say when a man who is ultimately responsible for the slaughter of 1 million innocent Iraqi non-combatant civilians starts talking about, well, let's just go to the clip and then we'll sort this out.
In our nation's 246-year history, there has never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic than Donald Trump. He tried to steal the last election using lies and violence to keep himself in power after the voters had rejected him. He is a coward. A real man wouldn't lie to his supporters. He lost his election, and he lost big. I know it, he knows it, and deep down, I think most Republicans know it. In our nation's 200...
Yeah. So a guy who slaughtered 1 million people as Vice President of the United States, who violated so many international norms and violated the law of the United States itself and perhaps even the Constitution and got away with it, says that in our nation's 246-year history, there's never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic. And Donald Trump. And then questioned his manhood. That's all the rage these days. These manly men challenging other manly men's manly masculinity, manliness. I guess, given who this is, we could say it's a dick measuring contest. I know. Shame on me. Unless somebody wants to give me a cowbell for that. Now, it is somewhat curious, in light of the fact that, for a significant period of time while he was vice president, Dick Cheney didn't have a pulse. And he's already got some other decent human beings' heart beating in his chest. You might recall a few years ago he said, that's not someone else's heart. That's my heart. Richard B. Dick Cheney, before ye dicks you. Thank you for the cowbell, Ralphs. I appreciate it. Well, he's 82 years old and looks a little bit more like Emperor Palpatine every day. And nobody's out there saying, he's too old! Because there's a segment of the Republican politician that would vote for him for president.
Well, W,
you gave me the task of finding you a running mate and a vice presidential nominee, and I looked high and low, and there's nobody better than me. So there you go.
He's also the oldest living former vice president. Yeah, he became that after Walter Mondale passed away in 2021. But when Dick Cheney says Nitwit Nero's not a real man, well, you know, out there in Wyoming, they know what real men are. All right. Well, thank you. I'll take the second one, too. Sumon, I shamelessly award you a cowbell. Ring it hard. Thank you. Yeah, Matt in San Francisco noting. Subject line, Cheney. Well, if anyone knows a thing or two about lying, it's Dick Cheney. He must not be harvesting enough organs because he's sounding more like Wilford Brimley than Darth Vader. You know, I get up every morning and I sprinkle some Metamucil on my oatmeal and keeps me all regular like and feeling young and spry and sprightly. Sounding more like Wilford Brimley than Darth Vader. Every time I see Wilford Brimley, I hear my father in the bygone days. He just got so tired of Wilford, and Wilford would come on pitching one thing or another, and he'd put a sock in it, Wilford! The kids were very little at the time, and they picked that up pretty quickly, and sometimes, especially little Doodle. She's precious. Wonderful sense of humor. She could cut you to the bone, and you'd be, you know, you'd be on the way out before you even knew you'd been cut with her razor wit. And it got to where the minute Wilford came on TV, before my father could even get the words out of his mouth, that little voice, "I'll put a sock in it, Wilford." Oh, precious memories. So the guy who murdered a million people says Nitwit Nero is the greatest threat our republic has ever faced. You know, that includes Robert E. Lee. That includes Jefferson Davis. That includes every bad man in the history of the country, and Nitwit Nero's worse. And he's not a real man either. Well, you do you, Dick. I mean, I can't say I disagree. One individual noting, he's right, but Dick Cheney isn't what I would call a moral authority. And then there's a maggot down there. I guess he's never heard of Joe Biden then. I mean, this is, after all, the same Dick Cheney who shot his friend in the face. I mean, maybe he's not the guy to trot out as the never Trump critic. You know, Randy Radar pointing out, he was essentially president of the United States. Well, yeah. And then there was that fateful morning in 2004 when he walked into the Oval Office only to find his young protege, W, slumped over the Resolute desk, weeping uncontrollably with the Washington Post, page one, right there on the desk. And Dick looked at him and said, "W, what's wrong? Get a hold of yourself, man." And W, tears streaming down his face, looked at Dick and said, "My God, Dick, have you not seen the news? Look here. It says that a Brazilian was killed in Iraq last night. Yeah, so what? My God, Dick. You don't have a heart, do you? Well, you don't have pulse. Do you know how many there are in a Brazilian? That's the best joke to come out of that entire filthy war. Ralphs knew where I was going. What's a Brazilian? Cheney on Trump, Matt in San Francisco, says it's sort of like Jeffrey Dahmer saying John Wayne Gacy went too far. I mean, it's true. It's just true. And John in Central PA said, I can hear your Cheney voice in my head. I'm sorry it works out that way sometimes. As Steve pointing out, he shot his friend in the face. You forgot the best part, and I did. His friend apologized for getting his face in the way of Dick Cheney's shotgun. It's kind of like when your big brother takes your hand and starts slapping you in the face with your own hand because he's bigger and stronger and says, hey, quit slapping yourself. Quit slapping yourself. Quit slapping yourself. You can't do anything about it. By the way, and this is somewhat gratifying. Down in Texas, the Biden administration has sued Texas Governor Greg Asbot and his corrupt government, being as how the state government is seated at Austin. The suit was filed therein as well. And it was assigned to U.S. District Judge David Ezra, who has been on the bench since the Reagan administration. He is literally an appointee of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. And they sued over the 1,000-foot-long barrier of barrels wrapped in razor wire that the vicious, bloodthirsty thugs of the Republican government of Texas stuck in the Rio Grande to stop drug traffickers, actually to drown desperate migrants. In his ruling, Judge Ezra kind of stuck it in and broke it off in Greg Asbot. Put a broom handle in his spokes. And he granted a preliminary injunction to the Biden administration, we the people of the United States, while the case is in litigation, and said, now listen here, Greg Asbot, because he's a Reagan appointee, he's probably... So I give him the John Wayne voice. I'm giving you till September 15th to take down that barrier. And don't be thinking you can build any new ones until we've had a trial on this whole shooting match, Pilgrim. I mean, this is a rock-ribbed Republican appointee. This is a Reagan appointee. And rightly, the Department of Justice said that the floating torment barrier poses risks to health and public safety. and damages the relationship, the international relationship between the United States and Mexico. And of course, foreign diplomacy is entirely and solely within the purview of the executive branch of the federal government. Greg Asbot does not get to negotiate separate agreements with the Mexican government or try to go to war with them. And the Biden administration cited the Rivers and Harbors Act, which says that no one, county government, city government, state government, no one can obstruct the navigable capacity of the waters of the United States without express written consent of the commissioner of Major League Baseball. No, without express permission of the government. Well, in their pathetic attempt at responding to the suit and the petition for the injunction, the pettifoggers for the state of Texas said, "Oh, the U.S. Constitution gives Texas the authority to repel invasions. And that means thousands of migrants, too, who ain't even got guns. Barely got clothes on their backs. But they's an invasion, and we can repel that invasion under U.S. Constitution," which is entirely a bunch of specious baloney. And then told the court that the Rio Grande is not within the ambit of the Rivers and Harbors Act. And Reagan appointee Judge David Ezra was having precisely none of it. And Judge Ezra said, "The impairment to free and safe navigation outweighs Texas's interest in installing the system." Now, this all happened yesterday. And Greg Asbot is probably throwing a fit in the governor's mansion because he likes it when the Mexicans die. He's just that kind of monster. The Justice Department said, "We're pleased that the court ruled that the barrier was unlawful and irreparably harms diplomatic relations, public safety, navigation, and operations of federal agency officials in and around the Rio Grande." That was Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta in a statement. Meanwhile, the Texas lawyer said, "We'll continue to utilize every strategy to secure the border, including deploying Texas National Guard soldiers and Department of Public Safety troopers and installing strategic barriers. Texas is prepared to take this fight all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court." That was a statement by Greg Asbot. So is he telling telling Judge Ezra, cloaked as he is with all the majesty and power of an Article III lifetime appointment to the federal bench, that he, David Ezra, can sit and spin? Because if that's the case, Greg Asbot may find himself being ordered to roll on into the federal courthouse there in Austin and answer to some contempt charges. "Now listen here, little fella. I didn't stutter when I rolled." God, Greg Asbot wants to start shooting Mexicans. And they're not even, most of them aren't Mexicans. Hondurans, Guatemalans, Salvadorans, Nicaraguans. Desperate to get away from the political and economic nightmares that the United States and prior administrations has created for them. The ruination of their countries through things like NAFTA. And so this is all part of the whole using human beings as pawns filth that AskBot is engaging in. It was July when he sent a letter to the White House, AskBot did, saying that you're impeding my state's sovereign interest in securing our border. Well, it's not your border, dickhead. It is the border of the United States of America, which, well, for good or ill, Texas is still part of. And so he's busing migrants to places like Los Angeles, Chicago. A little over a month ago, a three-year-old baby who'd been stuffed onto one of Greg Assbot's buses died on the way to Chicago. And they've sent over 30,000 migrants. They're not sending them to Alabama or Tennessee. They dupe them and trick them and send them to blue states. Where those blue states, to their credit, do the best that they can by them. Really would kind of like to see Greg Assbot explain his sovereignty to an Article 3 U.S. District Judge. Oh, and we are at the halfway point of the program. And we've got $600 to raise. We got all caught up all the way through yesterday. And there's a challenge on the table. The Donnie Wants to Debate Meghan Markle challenge, courtesy of Ralph's up in New Jersey. So if we can raise $25, the $25 will get doubled and we'll be down to $550. Be helpful. So, now a little more fun. You know, for a long time now, we've talked about the fact that, and again, this is a case of this program being way ahead of the curve. We've talked about the law degree that Jim Jacketoff Jordan got when he sent in the back of the matchbook and drew Spunky the Turtle, or the pirate. And they sent him back a law degree. Well, confirming our earlier discussions, Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis didn't bother with a shot across Jim Jacketoff Jordan's bow. She just went ahead and put a cannonball direct amidships. I think she holed him below the waterline. Because, as you know, Jim Jacketoff Jordan, sent to Congress by some people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings and mouth walk and knuckle breathe in a bizarrely drawn district in Ohio. Well, he's trying to run interference for his God Emperor. And so he, as the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which kind of shows how little interest the Republicans have in the House Judiciary Committee, has sent a demand that Fonnie Willis deliver every document she has and explain herself for having the unmitigated gall to prosecute a damn criminal. Well, Fonnie Willis... ain't impressed. He sent her a letter late August demanding information and communications. Well, as of September 7th, Bonnie Willis officially responded in writing to Jim Jacketoff Jordan. And she didn't hold back. She said, and let's just do the letter here. Dear Mr. Jordan, not even dear Representative Jordan, ow. You spend all that money, engage in all that graft and all that corruption, just to have a district attorney in Atlanta call you Mr. Dear Mr. Jordan, I have received your letter dated August 24, 2023. On August 14, 2023, a Fulton County grand jury returned a true bill of indictment charging 19 defendants with felony violations of Georgia law, including violation of Georgia's Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organizations Act, Georgia RICO, OCGA Section 16141 et sec. Beyond that recitation of the charges, your letter contains inaccurate information and misleading statements. In other words, you're wrong and a liar. The true bill of indictment returned on August 14, 2023 is attached as Exhibit A. You know, because you're too stupid to figure out. One, your attempt to interfere with and obstruct this office's prosecution of state criminal cases is unconstitutional. Oh! Take him to school, D.A. As you know, Chairman Jordan, which is a way of saying, I know you don't know, the congressional power of inquiry is not unlimited. Citation. Congress is not a law enforcement or trial agency. That function is reserved only for the executive and judicial departments of government. Id. Moreover, investigations conducted solely for the personal aggrandizement of the investigators or to punish those investigated are indefensible. Id. More fundamentally, a congressional subpoena is valid only if it is related to and in furtherance of a legitimate task of the Congress, and cites Trump versus Mazars. Ooh, that's going to sting. Your letter. Whew. Lady. Your letter offends each and every one of these settled principles. Its obvious purpose is to obstruct a Georgia criminal proceeding. That's an allegation of crime. And to advance outrageous partisan misrepresentations. You're a liar. As I make clear below, there is no justification in the Constitution for Congress to interfere with a state criminal matter, as you attempt to do. See obstruction of a criminal proceeding above. I added that. Furthermore, your note calls to mind, it's not even a letter anymore, it's a note. Oh my God, folded up on loose leaf paper. Do you like me? Furthermore, your note calls to mind another letter recently submitted to a House Select Committee. This unprecedented action serves no legitimate legislative purpose and would set a dangerous precedent for future Congresses. The American people deserve better. C. Letter from Representative Jim Jordan to Chairman Benny Thompson, dated January 9th, 2022. Ooh. She's beating him about the head and shoulders with his own shit. A. Your letter offends principles of state sovereignty. Good God, this thing goes on for 9 pages. The demands in your letter and your efforts at intruding upon the state of Georgia's criminal authority violate constitutional principles of federalism. Criminal prosecutions under state law are primarily the responsibility of state governments. Congress's lawful prerogative to interfere with states' administration of their criminal laws is extremely limited. And cites a textbook, See Charles W. Johnson et al. House Practice, a guide to the rules, precedents, and procedures of the House. The investigative power cannot be used to inquire into matters which are reserved to the states. Good God, she's telling him how to be a congressman. Lord, she holds him in contempt, and rightfully so. Your letter transgresses separation of powers principles. Your letter improperly interferes with the administration of criminal justice. I mean, this really is. She went to a real law school, and a rather good one. She went to Emory in Atlanta. Jim, as noted before, mailed in a matchbook. And she tells him, among other things, your letter seeks the revelation of non-public and privileged information concerning my office's investigation and prosecution of a specific case. Your public statements in your letter make clear that you lack any legitimate legislative purpose for that inquiry. Your job description as a legislator does not include criminal law enforcement, nor does it include supervising a specific criminal trial, because you believe that doing so will promote your partisan political objectives. Jesus Christ, don't hold back. This leads me to a critical point. Uh-oh, I'm slipping into Southern. Every president takes office knowing that he will be subject to the same laws as all other citizens upon leaving office. This is a feature of our democratic republic, not a bug. House Committee on Ways and Means versus U.S. Department of Treasury, 45 Federal 4th, 324, 338, D.C. Circuit, 2022. Indeed, even Mr. Trump himself has acknowledged before the U.S. Supreme Court that state grand juries are free to investigate a sitting president with an eye toward charging him after the completion of his term. Trump versus Vance, 140 Supreme Court, 2412, 2426, 27. For the rule of law to prevail, nobody should be permitted to violate state criminal law with impunity. Your letter burdens the deliberate process privilege. My voluntary responses to portions of your letter are below. Things like your notion, it's a notion now, that different standards of justice should apply to a select group of people is offensive. Defendant Trump's status as a political candidate cannot make him a legally immune individual from criminal prosecution. An explanation of the basic obligation of a prosecutor is below. Your letter makes clear that you lack a basic understanding of the law, its practice, and the ethical obligations of attorneys general and prosecutors specifically. And gives him chapter and verse. Your questioning of the overt predicate acts listed in the indictment is misinformed. Your questioning of the length of the investigation and timing of the indictment is unfounded. The Fulton County District Attorney's Office has used federal grant funding for its intended purposes. Your allegations that I have used this prosecution for political benefit are unfounded. Below are suggestions for productive activity by the House Judiciary Committee. Ooh. I do have some suggestions on how you can engage in productive legislative activity. First, victim witness advocates who take care of vulnerable victims and witnesses in prosecutors' offices across the United States are grossly underpaid. Many have advanced degrees and specialized training on serving people in distress. Fulton County, Georgia, like many jurisdictions, face significant challenges in recruiting and retaining such highly trained, dedicated public servants at current pay rates. Congress should provide more funding to states and localities for victim witness advocate pay, and ensure that such funding flows to the jurisdictions that need it most. The federal government is funding a program to turn children around who find themselves in trouble with the criminal justice system. We partner with the United States Attorney's Office in Atlanta to sponsor the Credible Messengers program, which matches at-risk youth with adults who have been in trouble and who can share their own life experiences and serve as mentors who show them a better way. You can learn more about the program by watching Program Aims to Keep Kids Out of Gangs, WSB TV Channel 2 Atlanta. This program, while valuable, has very limited capacity and leaves too many youths in need unserved. Congress should greatly expand it. She needs help with the crime labs. It's so overwhelmed, its leadership informed me that it does not have the capacity to test drugs like fentanyl or firearms used in violent crimes in a timely manner, and referred us to private testers to obtain necessary evidence. Further, Georgia State Crime Lab does not have the adequate financial resources to properly pay their scientists, test rape kits, drugs, or other scientific evidence in a timely manner. And then I. The safety of persons serving in the criminal justice system should be a primary concern of yours. As it seems, you have a personal interest in the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. You should consider directing the USDOJ to investigate the racist threats that have come to my staff and me because of this investigation. For your information, I am attaching 10 examples of threats this office has received. See Exhibits F through O. I'm providing these examples to give you a window into what has happened to my staff and me as I keep the promise of my oath to the United States and Georgia constitutions and do not allow myself to be bullied and threatened by members of Congress, local elected officials, or others who believe Lady Justice should not be blind and that America has different laws for different citizens. Yours in service, Fonnie T. Willis. I don't see the exhibits. But the best part of it, as if, well, the whole thing is gold. She called him out, gave no ground, accused him, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, of engaging in obstruction of justice. Stay out of Georgia, Jim. You might want to tell Marge to keep her filthy gob shut, too, while you're at it. And then, once again, sticking the blade in and giving it a nice twist, Fonnie Willis said, you know, you might want to drop $249 on a book called RICO, State by State. You might understand a little bit more about how RICO acts work then. She has, in a word, stuck it to him. And I'm sure in no time flat he'll be pissing and moaning on some maggot broadcast. And, well, if he read Exhibits F through O, I can imagine that he's probably trundling around his office there in the in one of the House office buildings using some of those same words. Because, you know, that's who Jim Jacket Off Jordan is. But good on her. He's fucking around with the wrong badass woman. Oh, and a while back, by the way, lines are open if anybody wants to chat. You're more than welcome to jump into the conversation. The stress line is open. That's 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And then, of course, there's Skype. Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N. And that'll get you right into the program. If you've never sent me a contact request on Skype and you want to get you to do so, you're more than welcome to be part of the conversation. Anyway, and by the way, $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. Be nice if we could go two nights in a row without a goose egg. Or, well, go. It would be nice if we didn't go two nights in a row with a goose egg. I think that probably states it better. Regardless, Randy Radar says all Trump has to do is stay in Florida and to not get extradited to Georgia. No, he's already within Georgia's jurisdiction. He's been booked, mugshotted, printed, and arraigned. If he refuses to show up, his bond gets revoked, and yeah, he could be extradited, and Monkey Up Duplantis couldn't do a damn thing about it. But like I said, a little while back, we talked about the fact that Florida has decided that propaganda videos from a huckster named Dennis Prager and his Prager U scam, which isn't a university, that those are acceptable teaching materials in the public schools of the state of Florida. Well, if you'd asked me to bet on it, I would have said that the next state to have done that would have been Texas. But I would have been wrong. Turns out the next state was Oklahoma Stan, led by their maggot governor, Stitt. Holy Stitt! Sorry, couldn't resist. And there's a they're going to be using PragerU in Florida, and now they're going to use it in Oklahoma because it's a grift that puts tasty, tasty, tasty cash in the pockets of maggots like Dennis Prager. Make no mistake, Prager U, they can't use the word university, they just imply it. Prager U is in no way, shape, or fashion an accredited academic entity. It's just a propaganda mill for right-wing garbage. State Education Superintendent Ryan Walters, who's a maggot of the first order, who, among other things, has said that the Tulsa race massacre of 100 years ago had nothing to do with race. Among other things, this with Labor Day just in the immediate past, Ryan Walters has also said that the teachers' union is terrorists, and he's a big fan of Moms for Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. So he made a statement and said, "This expansion of our availability resources will help ensure high-quality materials rich in American history and values will be available to our teachers and students. We will work together to find ways for PragerU to grift the entire... No, to create content that will enrich the education of Oklahoma student." Among other things, PragerU produced a video, I'm not kidding, called "Leo and Layla Meet Frederick Douglass." That video has cartoon Frederick Douglass tell the two impressionable little time travelers that the enslavement of millions of people of African origin was actually a compromise between the founding fathers and the brutal, oppressive, enslaving southern states, colonies. Of course, that goes hand in hand with the idea of the benefits of slavery that they want to teach about down in Florida. And I'm not going to lie, I worry. I worry about a generation of miseducated children. Not poorly educated, miseducated, deliberately miseducated children. On issues social, cultural, historic. They haven't gotten around to, well, no, let's see, there was Jesus Math Made Easy. That was about 10 or so years ago, wasn't it? Where 2 plus 2 and Jesus makes it 7. Or 3. Or 9. But inherent in all of this, there is no such thing as racism. It is an implicit approval of white supremacy.
Well, that's just the way it is.
Somebody cue up Bruce Hornsby in the range. So it starts with Oklahoma, Stan, and Florida. And it's going to get regressively worse. Lee in New York says, Prager used Leo and Layla. Sounds like the PBS show Liberty's Kids without the liberty part. Oh, this is ugly. And it's going to result in this country going horribly, horribly backwards. And by the way, PragerU's been around since 2009. That grift. And they are the darlings of outfits like Moms for Liberty and Ron Monkey up to Klantis and Kevin Stitt in Oklahoma Stan. But it's also indicative of a greater problem. And it's a problem that Monkey Up can't run away from. And that is that education is going straight to hell. In Florida, they have horrible attrition rates among teachers. Probably a majority of college professors in Florida are looking elsewhere for work. And it's only going to get worse. Because Republicans generally, it's not just it's not just Monkey, it's not just the maggots, it's not just Florida. They desperately need for people to be poorly educated. It's essential to their plans. Nearly half of Florida's college faculty say that they are looking for new jobs somewhere besides Florida. This, as Governor Orwell, monkey up, keeps calling Florida the education state. Over 4,250 faculty members across four different states, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and Texas, were surveyed in an article mentioned in the Tampa Bay Times. They wrote, across all four states, 31% of those surveyed said they were actively considering interviewing in a different state this year. In Florida, it was about 46%, and 28% said they'd already interviewed. As part of the survey, 85% of college educators said in the survey they would not encourage a graduate student or faculty in another state to come to Florida. And 95% of those 4,250 surveyed said that the environment, the education environment in Florida, was poor or worse. The fact that they had to create a category worse than poor says a lot. I mean, what is that? Awful? This is like the difference between really bad and horrible. Andrew Gothard, in the Tampa Bay Times article, who is the president of the United Faculty of Florida, said the brain drain that we've been concerned about and the trends that we've been wondering about, based on what we've seen here, are certainly happening. Meanwhile, monkey up, well, I like it, because them people that are leaving are Marxist studies professors. Yeah, Marxist mathematics, Marxist calculus, Marxist geology, Marxist French, Marxist anthropology. Okay, there's some Marxism in anthropology and sociology, no doubt about it. But, you know, Marxist astronomy, Marxist nursing studies, Marxist medicine, because he doesn't dare admit, monkey up, that he is actively de-educating the entire state of Florida. And that's just Florida. Let's go to Texas, where something similar is also happening. 1,900 Texas faculty members have been surveyed, and over 25% of those professors, we're talking about college, said they're going to look somewhere else in the country this year because Texas state government and the maggots thereof can't keep their noses out of education and want their right-wing maggot political ideology to drive academic inquiry. American Association of University Professors and the Texas Faculty Association did the survey. And its results said, these findings serve as a wake-up call for policymakers, administrators, employers, and other concerned citizens. Wait a minute, a wake-up call? You mean woke? These findings serve as a wake-up call for policymakers, administrators, employers, and other concerned citizens, emphasizing the urgent need to address the concerns raised by faculty members. Failure to do so may result in a significant exodus of faculty, challenges attracting academic talent, and an overall decline in the quality of higher education. And so apparently they were asked similar questions to those asked in Florida. Two-thirds of the respondents in this survey said they would not recommend out-of-state colleagues take positions in Texas. 57% of the professors said that the political climate is their top reason for wanting to leave. The second and third most cited reasons to leave were anxiety over salary and academic freedom. Things like bans on diversity, equity, and inclusion departments and trainings take a toll. It's a way of telling anyone who is not white, Christian, and heterosexual that, by God, it doesn't matter how intelligent you are or what you know or how much you know. You're not welcome because you're not white, you're not cis, you're not Christian, and you're not straight. Because Texas has its own anti-woke law, SB 17. It's passed, it takes effect at the beginning of the next year. And it bans diversity, equity, and inclusion offices at every public college and university. And the maggots want to go after the concept of tenure, too. Whereby a professor who has been good enough at what they do to stay in their position long enough are harder to fire, even if you don't like their politics, damn it. The American Association of University Professors Texas Conference President Brian Evans said, I heard from a couple of folks from private universities that would be well regarded nationally, and they were having trouble hiring. People just don't want to come to Texas. It is, in fact, the same survey that was done in Florida. And it is going to bear terrible fruit down the road. This really is a form of I'm the one who coined the phrase. This really is a form of constructive secession. These maggot states, be it Texas or Florida or Oklahoma, Alabama, Tennessee, don't want the diversity that makes a society and a culture rich and vibrant. They want the homogeneous, pasty, doughy, white dominant culture of 1859. And they will do whatever is necessary to get the undesirables out. And the ones who can't get out, the ones who have to stay, will have absolutely hell to pay. Happy Vlad, David in South Carolina, Stan says, Vlad could not be happier to watch the USA destroy itself. I'm sure he spends his days giggling, you know, when he's not wondering where the guy with the knife is. Absolutely right, David. So that's 2 hours and 5 minutes of a filler obster. We've got more more content, some more potential crooked as a dog's hind leg criminality from Sammy Bad Breath Alito, because of course. But it is Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report from Brad and Desi over at bradblog.com. And I try not to filler obster through that because I love their work. I love what they do. They're really good at it. So let's take a sec and check in with Brad and Desi. Hard for me to believe I've known them for 20 years. Take it away, y'all.
Day, September 5th, 2023.
And now the storm has passed, and you're dealing with what's left in its wake. Your nation has your back, and we'll be with you until the job is done.
President Biden in disaster-stricken Florida calls on Congress to act after summer of climate disasters.
I think I could be trapped here for a couple more days.
Nevada's Burning Man becomes newest victim of climate extremes, plus...
Fossil fuels are a requirement for human prosperity. Drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear.
2024 presidential campaign kicks off with more denial and more delay.
And less DeSantis. All of those stories and more straight ahead from Bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Nobody can deny the impact of climate crisis.
At
least nobody intelligent can deny the impact of a climate crisis anymore.
That's better. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, well, it looks like the climate denial does continue even after an insane summer. We're now officially in fall. Everything should be fine now, right?
No, unfortunately, it won't be because the summer of extremes is just as extreme and getting extremier.
Uh-oh.
Two historic hurricanes hit the U.S. on both coasts while we were out, and new record-shattering extreme heat waves hit around the world. First, a follow-up in the historic West Coast landfall of Hurricane Hillary, which rapidly intensified over unusually warm Pacific Ocean waters. New damage estimates now top $10 billion across the West, and officials in Death Valley National Park have closed the park indefinitely due to extensive flood damage from Hillary.
Really?
On the East Coast, just a few days later, Hurricane Idalia also rapidly intensified, also fueled by record hot ocean waters in the Gulf of Mexico. It hit as a powerful Category 3 in the Big Bend region of Florida that hadn't seen a landfalling hurricane in more than a century. Idalia wrought havoc from Florida to the Carolinas and is now on track to become 2023's costliest single climate disaster for the U.S., with preliminary estimates of loss and damage at $10 to $20 billion, further straining Florida's rickety property insurance industry.
And if my math is right, we've still got 2 more months of storm season?
Actually, three.
Three! I'm sure it'll be fine.
The record hot waters in the Gulf of Mexico also generated extreme heat, with Gulf Coast cities like New Orleans and Houston recording new all-time high hottest temperatures. And yes, human-caused climate change is clearly connected to these record high ocean temperatures and the rapid intensification of storms.
It's not just down in Florida and New Orleans. It's like 90 degrees up in Minnesota today.
Yep, and the U.S. Gulf Coast has now seen an unprecedented 8 major hurricanes hurricane landfalls in just the last 7 years.
Did I say I'm sure it'll be fine?
In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, a 2024 Republican presidential candidate, declined to meet with President Biden on a routine tour of the damage. Over the weekend, Biden continued without DeSantis, promising ongoing federal support for Florida.
And we're not going anywhere, the federal government. We're here to help the state as long as it takes. Anything they need related to these storms.
Biden on Monday also called on Congress to boost funding for FEMA's disaster assistance programs, which are already running out of money, as happens nearly every year now due to accelerating frequency and magnitude of extreme weather disasters that now hit the U.S. every 3 weeks or so.
Weird. I wonder why.
Speaking of politics, while we were out, Republican 2024 presidential candidates doubled down on climate science denial and delay in their first debate. DeSantis and the others wouldn't say whether they accept mainstream climate science, that climate change is caused by humans burning fossil fuels, but fast-talking entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy outright called climate change a hoax.
I'm the only person on the stage who isn't bought and paid for, so I can say this. The climate change agenda is a hoax.
And, of course, now new reporting reveals that Ramaswamy has at least $50 million invested in a fund dedicated to drilling as much climate-warming fossil fuels as possible.
If anyone knows hoaxes, it's Vivek Ramaswamy.
Finally, more unprecedented extreme weather hitting in unexpected places also caused chaos at the Burning Man Festival in Nevada. A climate protest at the start of the event caused an hours-long traffic jam, and then an unusual torrential storm turned the desert into treacherous mud, trapping tens of thousands of people amid overflowing latrines and shortages of food and water. One death at the festival is under investigation, and this latest disaster demonstrates once again that climate change intensified extreme weather events can strike everywhere at any time.
Well, they went to the desert knowing it'd be about 115 degrees, so maybe this was nice. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I'm burning, I'm burning, I'm burning for you. I'm burning, I'm burning.
Oh, those crazy kids can always find it, and it's Desi's doing, I think. Can always find a killer bumper. What's it, Randy? It's the file they sent me. They sent it. I played it. I wasn't here Tuesday. This was the file that was in my mail today. But I did find it, because how can I not? Oh, thank you. Thank you to Frank and to Christopher. Both Frank and Christopher jumped in and answered the challenge. Ralph says, Nitwit Nero wants to debate Meghan Markle challenge. I have a feeling she'd make a hog wallow of him, stomp a mud hole in him. God, he doesn't like black women, does he? I know. That's our statement of extreme obviousness for the evening. But he doesn't. But the challenge has been answered both by Frank and by Christopher, so that means that we're actually down to 525 instead of 550, 525. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Christopher. And thank you, Frank. All so very much. With the mention of Burning Man, and I'm a little worried. I was checking with some friends of mine, one of our more road warrior-ish regulars and friend across the river, went out Burning Man and hadn't heard from him. I need to check in again and just make sure he's okay. But we had with the mention of Burning Man, well, everything, I suppose, everything is catnip for marginal trailer queen. At one point in time, the New York Times described Burning Man as 50,000, because it's the New York Times, 50,000 stoned half-naked hippies doing sun salutations while techno music thumps through the air. Now, Marge is very upset because, well, Marge is always very upset because she's Marge. She went over to have a little chat with Alex Jones. And once you're there in the guest chair at Alex Jones, if you don't say insane shit, you don't get invited back. But of course, when Alex Jones and Marge get together, all the crazy and stupid rises to the top. Got the hockey puck.
But I really believe the next thing is going to be this climate change crisis. They're going to create it into an emergency. And Alex, I want to talk about Burning Man for a minute. We are watching, from a distance, there are approximately like 73 or 75,000 people in Nevada.
And they're locked in there from floods. And I'm glad, I was going to raise that. They literally did a mock sacrifice in all this, and then it flooded with these tornadoes, and it was, sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, God has a way of making sure everyone knows who God is. I'll say that about that. But let's talk about what is happening to these people. So,
you know, by hurting people, because God is love, y'all.
There's 73, 75,000 people in Nevada desert right now at this Burning Man. They're locked in. They're not allowed to leave. And they're basically probably being brainwashed that climate change is the cause of all of it.
Well,
and it's going to destroy the earth. And they're feeling the panic.
And they're not even saying that. Oh, this is because you didn't know about climate change.
Yes. So what's going to happen, Alex? It's the same thing, same way they launch any kind of movement. After this is over in Burning Man and these 75,000 people disperse and they go back home, they're going to have these stories to tell and how terrible it is and how we have to do everything possible to stop climate change. It's caused by humans and it's carbon. And it's the amount of carbon that we put out. It's manufacturing. It's our gas and diesel engines. It's agriculture. I mean, AOC wants to get rid of cattle. Even population, we have too many humans putting out too much carbon. You're going to start hearing all this stuff, and this is going to build. And I believe this is the left's new lie they're going to put on the American people and try to get everyone behind and create it to where, remember AOC and the left and many others said that the earth is going to literally explode in a ball of fire. We're going to all die. It's going to be the end of the world.
2030.
This is what they're brainwashing people to believe.
No, I totally agree. And now Biden says he's set to announce a new climate emergency that Klaus Schwab said 3 years ago they do after COVID. So they literally cut our resources off and make it fancy.
Well, let's be realistic, though.
Huh?
Yes, the climate changes. It's been changing since the beginning of time. Since God created the earth, the climate has changed. And that is the reality because we live on our planet is moving. It's rotating. It's moving through our
galaxy.
God damn, I think I just lost 15 IQ points. I mean, if this is all God's doing, do they not realize, does Marge not realize that she's making the case that God is a humongous fuck-up? Can't do anything right? Created a planet where everything dies? You know, it's the old George Carlin joke. Hey, man, flowers are the only thing you buy and you take them home and they die and you don't complain. This is the death planet. Never mind prison planet. Oh, my Jesus. And Burning Man, they burn a big straw man at the end of Burning Man. It's not satanic. And so you got 75,000 people have been brainwashed. Marge? Sugar? Do you have any idea who goes to Burning Man? It's not the young Republican, sweetie. Those are people who already know climate change is a thing. And of course, there's some social media influencers, and I don't know. Was Kylie Jenner there? Does anyone care? This was a goddamn Dagwood sandwich of stupid.
Only constant is change.
It always changes. It rotates around the sun. It moves through the galaxy. Our galaxy rotates through the universe. Of course our climate is going to change. But does that mean people are causing it? No. Does that mean we have to raise taxes to stop it? No, absolutely not. Does that mean we have to bow down to a globalist government? Absolutely not.
As if they can stop it anyways.
They can't stop it.
It's all the sun, as you said. So.
Right.
So wait, the Earth rotates on its axis and rotates around the... Suddenly I'm time traveling. Pooty wheat, y'all. But I remember being taught that at least the scientific terminology was that the Earth rotates on its axis, but it revolves around the sun. It doesn't rotate around the sun. It's not actually the same thing. The words don't mean identical things. It rotates on its axis. Rotation is relative to itself, but it revolves around the sun. And quite honestly, I'm surprised she was willing to go that far because, Christians wanted to kill Galileo for saying that. It's just, oh my. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, so we're kind of obliged to play this kind of stuff. AOC wants to get rid of all the cows. Well, honey, if eliminating the bovids means you're not there anymore, sign me up for veganism. Since the beginning of time, Steve notes, I was waiting for her to say 6,000 years ago or all the way back to the flood. Oddly enough, Brother Deacon Asa and I were talking about that earlier today. And, it wasn't Brother Deacon Asa. It was our buddy Reverbo, the human man. Arnold responding, flat earth, baby, yeah. Fake sun, too. Now, Reverbo said, I heard this was the hottest summer in the Northern Hemisphere in over 125,000 years. Hey, if you're a Republican or other idiot, nothing to worry about. And I wrote back, stupid libtards! Earth ain't even 125 years old! So, Steve, you were waiting, I was waiting. Steve noting, it rotates around the sun. Heard that? Yeah. See that one? The Earth revolves around the sun. Potato, potato. Only in New York with a warning. Stop it, Robin. Don't try to make sense of MTG. It'll only affect you negatively. God created everything, including Marge. The atheists are right. And the Earth... I follow this stuff pretty closely, and I missed the part where the... I missed the part where the Earth's going to blow up in a giant fireball in 2030. God, they need to stop doing the brown acid. I love that. God has ways of making sure everyone knows who God is by hurting the people that he claims to love. So, by the way, they were talking, oh, there were tornadoes. No, there weren't any. I mean, they literally did a mock sacrifice and all this, and then it flooded with these tornadoes. There weren't any tornadoes. Not any at all. And Alex Jones apparently thinks that tornadoes cause floods. Well, God knows they drop sharks in your yard, so anything's possible. "50,000 stoned, half-naked hippies doing sun salutations while techno music thumps through the air." Wouldn't you love to know who the New York Times reporter was that wrote that? You know, standing there in the Nevada desert in a three-piece suit. Brooks Brothers, of course. Half-naked hippies. Don't threaten me with a good time, New York Times. You know, if Marginal Trailer Queen didn't exist, we would have to invent her. And by the way, while we were talking about Texas a little bit ago, I have neglected to mention the ongoing trial of crooked as a dog's hind leg, so crooked he'll have to be screwed into the dirt when he dies, Ken Paxton. And this is, and I'm sure my dear friend John Britovo can wax philosophic and poetic on this one. But if there's ever been a better case of, come on, let's you and him fight, I ain't seen it. Because the Republican Party is absolutely tearing itself to pieces in the state of Texas. Some Texas maggots are staunchly in defense of Crooked Ken. He's looking at 16 impeachment charges. Everything from bribery to compelling staffers to break the law. Now we find out he had a side piece that his co-conspirator helped him hide his affair with. You know, because they got him some family values, right? And imagine this, former Texas governor and energy secretary, Rick Goodhair Perry, with his smart glasses, he of the infamous N-Head Ranch, and Carl Turdblossom Rove, are aligned against Ken Paxton. The New York Times and J. David Goodman, there's somebody that sounds like they got a Brooks Brothers suit or two. Shame on me. He said, the wrangling over Mr. Paxton's fate has reflected the same deep Republican divisions that emerged in Georgia over the indictment of Donald J. Trump. raising again the question of whether Republicans are willing to hold fellow conservatives to account, and whether, if they do so, they can then survive a primary. In May, a majority of Republicans in the House joined with Democrats to impeach Mr. Paxton, disturbed by his conduct in office. Disturbed? How about offended? Including longstanding allegations of corruption and a criminal indictment for securities fraud, and his effort to obtain $3.3 million in state funding to settle a lawsuit brought against him by some of his senior aides who became whistleblowers. And so the Republicans have turned on each other. The finger pointing. The finger pokes in the eyes. And, how dare you. And, meet me out, meet 12 paces right in the middle of Main Street. We'll shoot it out like down to the Alamo. Some of the maggots are mad, saying, y'all are just working with the Democrats. You're traitors. You're treasoners. A well-funded political action committee, Defend Texas Liberty, has begun targeting some Republican members of the Texas House who voted to impeach Mr. Paxton.
People know this is a political witch hunt. They're doing it to Trump. They're trying to do it to Paxton.
Yeah, but see, there's in both instances, there's this troubling little problem, a little something-something called evidence. I mean, anywhere but in a state that was sane, this wouldn't even be a close call. And I would still like a cogent answer how this fucker, Ken Paxton, has managed to cruise along in office for all these years, hurting so many people who are in no wise offensive to him or to the state of Texas. I mean, I think about what he's done to the families of trans kids, and Jesus Christ, people having to flee in the dark and still of the night to get away from him and his torment. But somehow or another, even though he's under a federal indictment, nobody has brought him to trial. And I'm not aware of anything that says federal indictments are stayed by a Texas attorney general remaining in office.
Defend Texas Liberty's president, Jonathan Strickland, says, we're going to spend an epic ton of money, and every one of these bums will be kicked out.
Well, Texas is still gerrymandered within an inch of its life, so it's probably too much to think that. But wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if they got rid of the Republicans who went after Ken Paxton, and then it turned out they were... Because the margins, that's the thing, we tend to see Texas as monolithic, but the margins in the Texas legislature are relatively slim for a maggot state. I know, every 2 years, every 4 years, we say, this is the year, is this the year Texas turns blue? And so far it hasn't been. Because so far, the gerrymandering still works. But between this, the impeachment of Paxton, and what Texas has done to manifest their hatred of women, maybe, just maybe, the tide is indeed beginning to turn. Dare to dream, y'all. Ken Paxton's wife, Lee, sends this along from electoralvote.com. I'll add that State Senator Angela Paxton, Ken Paxton's wife, whom he cheated on and is required to attend the proceedings by the state constitution, showed up in a red dress. Girl, go. I'll suggest that this is not to show support for Republicans, but rather a reference to the Wheel of Time's Red Asia, the notoriously misandrist faction, and whose TV series just launched its second season. She's out for blood. Oh, how quickly we forget. Have we forgotten the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones? You can almost see Angela Paxton standing over the bed with Ken Paxton in it and holding a jar of some liquid and saying, "This is a lie. And you have to sleep sometime. Straighten up." Here's one of the more enjoyable parts of the whole story. The maggots who support Ken Paxton are directly targeting anti-Paxton members of the Texas Senate. One of those anti-Paxton senators is a senator named Brian Hughes. Senator Brian Hughes is the Texas state senator who literally wrote the bill that gave all those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican maggots such a stiffy. He's the author of their 2021 abortion ban. What have you done for us lately? Yeah, you hate the women's, but you don't get to be mad about Ken Paxton. You gotta, if you sign up for one, you gotta sign up for the whole enchilada, hon. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And there are, the Republicans are coming unglued. Over at Michigan Live, Cole Waterman, a writer there, reported on 63-year-old James F. Chapman. Among other things, attended maggot protests supporting Nitwit Nero after he lost in 2020. And, he's described as a firebrand, usually a euphemism for dangerous terrorist. Cranky old dangerous terrorist. Turns out that firebrand Chapman, who has now been charged with disturbing the peace and assault and battery, I think the assault merges into the battery in this case. Because, back on July 8th, at the GOP meeting at the Doherty Hotel, Firebrand Chapman allegedly, and by allegedly I mean it's viewable, there's video, there was a body cam, because there was a cop in the room. Firebrand Chapman kicked the chairman of the Clare County, Michigan Republican Party smack dab in the balls. Mark L. DeYoung opened a conference room door during a GOP meeting at the Daugherty Hotel. According according to Cole Waterman, DeYoung heard banging, and fearing he was about to get punched, DeYoung said he took off his glasses. Firebrand Maggot Chapman charged him and tackled him. DeYoung hit a chair, landed on his back, and kicked him in the balls. DeYoung had never met Firebrand Chapman. Told the cops, I didn't say a word to him, but he was screaming the F word at me through the door. Firebrand Chapman said he's a member of the Wayne 6th Congressional District Republican Committee, and said he'd been locked out of the meeting. This was during a moment when True Lulu, I mean, woohoo, catcher, get the butterfly net, Christina Caramo was talking to the Michigan GOP, and Firebrand Chapman was rattling the door. And he opened the door and got kicked in the balls. He said Chapman charged him like a football player or a WWE wrestler. And in the fracas, Firebrand Chapman fell on his face and broke his teethuses in two. His dentures. Bit of a brawler, Firebrand Chapman is. Got into some fisticuffs on the steps of the state capital of Michigan. Jesus, these people. So he got a fishing pole and got a brown-haired Barbie doll and put a noose around its neck and hanged the Barbie doll from a 13-star Betsy Ross flag on the fishing pole to protest the fact that Governor Gretchen Whitmer wouldn't let him mow the snow. Remember those innocent days when they were so upset in, say, March of 2020 up in Michigan, and the maggots were all mad because they couldn't mow the snow? Another protester tried to grab the doll off of the flag. Firebrand Chapman told somebody from, of course, Sinclair Broadcast Group that, yeah, the Barbie doll with the noose around its neck was supposed to symbolize Gretchen Whitmer. Reminds me of Jonathan Swift. You will know a great man by these portents, or in this case, a great woman, that wherever she goes, she is surrounded by a confederacy of dunces. I guess maybe it's the wrong verb tense to say they are coming apart. They came apart a long time ago. We just happen to be watching it as it happens. I mean, you've got Stanley Woodward, remember the lawyer for the Olivetta and Waltine Nauta, Nitwit Nero's body man. He's been whining about the fact that Jack Smith made a deal with, what's his name, Tavares, to roll over on Nitwit Nero. And so Stanley Woodward said it was improper. Prosecutorial misconduct for a prosecutor to do what prosecutors do. Namely, bring pressure to bear on potential criminal defendants to get them to tell the truth, not the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them God, in a court proceeding. Yeah, he shouldn't have done that. Woodward claiming Tavares, Yassel Tavares, provided new testimony to the grand jury only after being offered a non-pros deal, which was reached after he was no longer representing the employee. More attorneys getting attorneys. MAGA, y'all. And I mentioned we had some further doings of Crooked Sammy Bad Breath. The Democratic majority of the Senate Judiciary Committee sent a letter to old Balls and Strikes John Roberts last week, suggesting that he take appropriate steps to ensure that Sammy Bad Breath recuses himself from Moore versus United States, another Moore versus... not Moore versus North Carolina, no. This all came after the infamous whining session that Sammy Bad Breath had with the Wall Street Journal and a Federalist Society lawyer. That would be David Rivkin. David Rivkin is one of the plaintiff's lawyers in Moore versus the United States. Moore versus United States is an attempt to stop the United States from being able to tax unrealized gains, like the appreciation of stock value. It amazes me that the United States does not tax unrealized gains in stocks. That's what allows, for instance, Leon Scum, you know, Space Karen, to garner massive amounts of wealth and be a tax deadbeat. And so this is all tied up with one of Sammy Bad Breath's benefactors. That would be, what's his name, Paul Singer? Sammy Bad Breath has no business sitting in judgment of the case. But again, there is no requirement whatsoever that a crook like Sammy Bad Breath use anything but his judgment in deciding whether to recuse. Americans for Tax Fairness, in a statement Wednesday, said Alito needs to recuse himself from the case deciding the constitutionality of a wealth tax. First, he accepted lavish gifts from billionaires and failed to disclose them. Then he gave a buddy-buddy interview to one of the case's anti-wealth tax lawyers. Enough. In the Senate Democrats' letter to Old Balls and Strikes, they said Mr. Rivkin's access to Justice Alito and efforts to help Justice Alito air his personal grievances could cast doubt on Justice Alito's ability to fairly discharge his duties in a case in which Mr. Rivkin represents one of the parties. Recusal in these matters is the only reasonable way for Justice Alito to prevent further damage to public confidence in the court. And so old Balls and Strikes will probably ignore this. Sammy Bad Breath will continue to sit on the case. And the billionaires will get exactly what they bought and paid for. And the Supreme Court of the United States will continue to destroy itself. Because there's nothing but pure greed. And this, I like Mehdi Hasan at MSNBC. They brought him on My Filthy Morning Habit today to answer the question, why do you waste your time with a little shit weasel like Wewek Ramaswamy? He actually gave a pretty good answer.
As you sat there live interviewing him, and as you sat there this morning watching it again, this horribly annoying person, did it occur to you during the course of the live interview, did it occur to you that maybe you were wasting 5, 10, 15 minutes of your life that you'll never get back?
Looks like Mike Barnicle's a listener, too, all the way to the end credits of the program. Your precious, finite time, and you just threw it away talking to a lying nerd in Wewek Ramaswamy. Hey, Mike.
Interviewing
person.
Jeez. Okay.
It's a great question, Mike. I mean, look, I actually have a hygiene test on my show where I don't allow election deniers, climate deniers, anti-vaxxers on, precisely because you're right, there can be a waste of time when you interview certain bad faith actors. The reason I wanted to interview Vivek Ramaswamy is, to be fair to him, he's not an election denier in the traditional sense, and he is now, whether we like it or not, a serious contender in the race. He's in third place. And because I just thought, look, this guy has been getting away with saying so much nonsense so far. He's able to pivot away from questions that he doesn't like. He's able to attack the liberal fake news media in a very Trumpian fashion. He denies things that are on tape, right? He denies more things than I've seen any politician deny since Donald J. Trump.
That's what I don't understand, Maddie, about this era.
It.
They deny things that we have tape.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, he's denying it, Maddie, while you're putting his words up on Twitter, on the full screen. Go ahead, Maddie. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I was going to say that there's another moment in the exchange where we talked about the scholarship he got from the Soros family as a law student, which he says, well, I didn't have any money. And I said, he denied saying that. And then I had to say, you did say you didn't have enough money. And then you did have enough money. He didn't even know his own tax returns. He said, Mehdi, go check my tax returns. I said, I've got them right here. You made $650K. You didn't need that scholarship. So he relies on people not holding him to account. And to go back to Mike's question, that's why I wanted to do it, because certain people, no matter how annoying it may be to do it, you have to hold them to account.
Okay.
So, Mehdi, there's been this conventional wisdom. I think it's in large part true that he is just a cynical actor, that he is a smart guy, whether you like him or not, or whether you disagree with him or not, and that he's saying the things and pushing the buttons that he believes the Trump voters and the base want to hear. Take the debate, for example. But then there are moments like last week he did an interview where he was asked about the war in Russia and the war in Ukraine, and he said, well, I said we need to cut off aid to Ukraine because this is some three-dimensional chess moment where we need to prop up Russia as a bulwark against China. So this is really about China. And, you know, even the most conservative of foreign policy analysts went, this is insane. This is crazy. It's not grounded in anything. It's a bad idea. It doesn't make sense. So where do you come down after studying him and talking with him? Is he just a cynical actor, or is he really naive about a lot of stuff?
I think
he's a bit dumb.
Of I think there's cynicism and naivety. I think, you know, we had a long back and forth about his idea that Mike Pence should have unilaterally passed voting reform on January the 6th in Congress as vice president. He doesn't quite understand the role of the vice president. I think on the Russia-China exchange, he has this line wherever he goes. I watched a lot of his interviews. He says it again and again. I will end the Russia-China military alliance. I will get Vladimir Putin to stop being the little brother to Xi. He says this all very confidently, very eloquently. And the question I put to him was, why should we take you seriously when you say you're the guy to end the war? What have you ever done in your life that suggests you can end a war? And I pointed out to him, I could go out on the street of Washington, D.C., stop someone at random, and they have as much experience of stopping a foreign war as Vivek Ramaswamy. That's not an insult. That's just a fact.
Well, Mehdi's full interview with Vivek Ramaswamy is available now on YouTube. I want to see the whole thing. You can also see it tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, streaming on the Mehdi Hasan Show on Peacock. The show also airs Sundays at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. Mehdi, thanks for being on this morning. Great job.
Yeah, let him get the plug in, but I get his point. But every time a serious journalist sits down with him, he draws some of the gravitas of the serious journalist. And that's the fundamental problem. He's dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. You know, got some book sense, but no common sense. But it's... But he's a shiny object, and there's always going to be somebody who needs a guest. And Mehdi Hasan is a good journalist, intelligent, asks probing questions, and here we are. And somehow or another, we wake Ramaswamy is being treated as though he's legit. I don't know. So that's it. That's the program. Randy Radar says, I call him Swammy No Whammy. Yeah, it's cat in Ohio. No whammy. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy. I need to look on YouTube and see if there's any old clips of that show. A little animated whammy would come out. Hey, thanks, everybody. This was a great Thorn in the Side Thursday. And thank you to Christopher and Frank and Ralphs for getting us down to 525. Thank you so much. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, Patreon supporters, PayPal supporters. Gosh, we really do need more subscribers. It would cut into the necessary pitching and hat passing. Thank you, though. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. In whatever manner you so choose. Matt in San Francisco, WeWick. I can't wait until WeWack Rosanna Dan is 15 minutes in. And they say, hey, WeWick Rosanna Dana. Oh, Matt. Parked another one in the cheap seats, didn't you? I think that was going to stick. We wake Rosanna Dana. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment for the algorithms. It helps. It increases our visibility on whatever platform you're on. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. I'm hearing the new booster could be out as early as next week. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots, because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves and not much about them. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And, you know, if WeWeck Rosanna Dana comes towards you on the sidewalk talking about, no, I never took a scholarship from George Soros. George Soros! I'll avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.